Andrew, back with Ernie on 3CR Breakfast, and we've got Kirsten O'Connell on the line. G'day, Kirsten. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, mate. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for getting up on this. You're in Canberra, aren't you?
No, I'm on Gadigal country here in Sydney.
Oh, cool. Okay. But it's, everyone tells me it's cold everywhere in Australia at the moment.
That's right. I think, yeah, it's a bit rough.
Yeah, yeah. Anti-Poverty Network's been looking at the new changes to the social security system and how it actually affects people. Can you give us a little bit of an understanding of this change to Workforce Australia and Job Active and the 100-point system and all the rest of it?
Yeah, so actually there's been a lot of talk about changes and how the system is going to work differently for people, and there are some differences, but the biggest problem is it's going to continue a lot of the really harmful and, you know, most unhelpful parts of the current system. So we're going to see a continuation of the same job agencies. We're going to see people having to do the same sorts of activities, lots of mandatory activities, particularly work for the dole is one of the worst ones. The ways that it's different are that we're now going to have two classes of unemployed people. So we're going to see one group of people put into what they call online services, where they're not really dealing with a job agency at all, but they do have this points target, which people might have heard about, where you have to do your activities, you gamify your welfare, add up to your points target for the month, doing a range of different things. And for folks who, there's about 200,000 people who'll be in that system from the start, another 600,000 who are going to have the points, have to do that sort of task of adding everything up, but they will also be with a job agency, so they'll still have those people in their life actually kind of dictating sort of what they need to do on top of having to jump through these hoops to get points.
Yeah, so what we're talking about is this kind of semi-privatised system that relies on the computerisation of things as if it's dealing with the fundamental issues that are happening for people who are unemployed.
That's right. I mean, what we have happening in this country is structural unemployment. We have people who are living in places where there are no jobs while there are other locations where jobs are available. We have people who aren't qualified for the jobs that are going where they live. We have people who are being discriminated against in the workforce, whether that's because of disability, because of their language that they speak, because of their cultural background, and none of these
their
things
age?
Are being addressed. Yeah, that's right, exactly. Age discrimination is a massive one. And right now, you know, we've got a couple of 100,000 folks in the system who are over 50 years old. So there's so many barriers to work, and none of them are going to be fixed by, you know, cobbling together some points to get through your hoops every month.
They do say in their list on the website that, if you live in a place of low unemployment, low employment prospects, that there is some wiggle room, assuming that, and so that you can have a lesser demand on you. Is that something that you've looked at?
Yeah, so one of the many problems is that we've got no transparency about how any of these so-called credits are going to work. Mm. So there's a range of things you can get credits for. It's very sinister. We've seen the unemployed workers, you can describe it as a little bit like an episode of Black Mirror, where you're going to get supposedly a credit if you live in a place where there's low employment prospects. You're going to get a credit if you're a certain age. You're going to get a credit if you've got a health condition. But at the end of the day, none of those things are going to create jobs. And the credits themselves are not actually going to be enough to reduce your overall, like you will have a little reduction in what you need to do, but they're not going to get rid of this whole system and replace what you're otherwise required to do.
It's actually quite fascinating for people who aren't on this system to realise things like, and it's very 18th century England, that people are not allowed to move to places that of high unemployment and expect to get social security. That's correct, isn't it?
That's right. And so actually this is just another of the very many things that are part of the current system that are going to be coming across that will continue into the new system. We have a situation, for example, where some folks might be familiar with my colleague Jeremy Poxon, a couple of months ago moved from a place that's about halfway between Bathurst and Ballarat, a tiny, tiny town with very few employment prospects because there's only a couple of thousand people living there, moved about an hour away over to Ballarat and, you know, got the call from Centrelink, we're going to cut your payment. And that's because there was about 4.2% unemployment in Ballarat, but 4% in Bathurst. And so they said, well, you've moved to a higher unemployment area, which is obviously ridiculous for so, so many reasons. But it does take away people's ability to really determine their course of their lives and also to make sure that they're in a place where they're, you know, they're as supported as they can be while trying to survive on payments and trying to get into the back into the workforce.
It puts a joke on the idea that we live in a free society.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think you'll find many people who are surviving on welfare payments now or who have in recent years that would tell you that they feel like a respected and full and free citizen of this society. Like, the conditions that are placed on people, and not just the conditions that are placed on people in terms of the activities you might have to do to get or to keep a payment, but also the payment itself really takes away your freedom because you have to kind of juggle so much of your life and restrict yourself from so many activities, not only to remain eligible for the payment, but to actually survive on it at all.
Yeah, it's fascinating. In fact, the thing that really tells you that you're not part of society is that none of the ads apply to you. Yeah. All those sweet billet dues from advertisers no longer apply to you.
Absolutely. No one is chasing the job seeker dollar. And, you know...
except the job agencies.
Well, no, absolutely. Well, they're chasing public money to brutalise people on the job seeker payment. But yeah, that is a good point. That is, such as there is a market, that certainly is it.
Yeah, well, because there's a lot of money in poverty.
Absolutely, and there's a lot of people profiting from it. Just no one who's actually trying to survive in the system.
So you're not seeing that there is going to be a huge change. What about the removal of the cashless debit card?
Yeah, so I guess just before, like, I step onto that, in terms of a huge change, there's lots of ways in which it won't change, but we do think that shifting to this more rigid point system is actually going to be a big negative change for people.
Yeah.
Some people will be okay, but it's creating a lot of risk. In terms of the cashless debit card, it's been really frustrating trying to get straight answers out of Labor Party now, both since they took government, but also in the lead up to election day, about what they mean. They have said some things that kind of indicate making cashless welfare voluntary, which is...
But it was always, you know, but it was always voluntary. And also... But you know that thing about...
It's the definition, right? It's the problem with the definition.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say that thing about... When people were struggling and the whole idea of quarantining people's money was because they were in a poorer state, but what they were doing was putting it right across the entire social security system.
Yeah.
It always existed. That's my point.
Yeah, and sort of what they say when they mean it's voluntary is actually nothing to do with the individual person's choice about how they want to live their life and how they're trying to manage their money. There are a very, very small number of people in each community where the cashless debit card currently exists who've been consulted and who have had a say in whether people in that community are subjected to cashless welfare. And so we don't actually have welfare recipients as a collective or individually deciding whether the card is happening to them. It is voluntary insofar as, you know, the mayor in Ceduna up to the government, and that's voluntary because he said Ceduna should be on the card. So it's not voluntary at an individual level, which if you were going to keep such a thing, that's how you should do it, but it actually just shouldn't exist at all. It doesn't need to be there in a voluntary or compulsory capacity. There are many, many, many other programs the government should be investing in to support people who want help managing their income and with the variety of challenges they're facing.
Yeah, yeah. And not only that, what weasel words. I mean, everybody, when you say voluntary, you're assuming it's at an individual level.
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the things that we've been really frustrated with. You know, at the moment, well, the government's equivocation and their refusal to say clearly what they mean when they have said voluntary, and it's sort of they gave the impression that it would mean each individual could choose, and then slowly they've been walking that back now, where we've seen the Social Services Minister, Amanda Rishworth, saying that, you know, she's hearing from communities that they want it. And I can guarantee you that that's not the majority of welfare recipients in those communities saying, yeah, impose this on us.
Oh, my God. And not to mention, so there's a couple of things here. One of the things I've been particularly interested in is the use of a private company to administer Social Security, which is what the divesting cashless debit card processes was really about, as far as I'm concerned. They may not call it that, but that's exactly what I think it is. What place does that put the government in, this new government in terms of the contracts that were made by the previous government, which that leads to, you know, does that mean that there can be any changes anyway?
Yeah, so we do have a big problem with people profiting from poverty in this country, and the contracts that go out to companies across a whole range of areas. So we obviously have some cashless welfare. Some parts of that system are very profitable for certain companies. Indue is the main one at the moment. We have programs like Parents Next, where parents are having their lives controlled and the choices they make about parenting controlled by the government. We have obviously got mutual obligations, out of control, private job agencies, literally, you know, manufacturing billionaires off the backs of the poorest people in the community, and a range of other things. And, you know, one of the problems is that this is viewed by government as a saving, because if they can sort of spend these billions of dollars putting these cops in place, then the job the cops are doing is actually kicking people off payments, making sure that the overall cost of payments is going down. So the privatisation component is a big problem, but actually the underlying problem is what's going on in the Social Security law. So at the end of the day, we think that there should be a high-quality public sector employment service. But if the law says you need to do these things in order to allow someone to continue receiving a payment, whether that person works for a private company or they're a public servant, if they have to impose those rules on people, that is going to keep hurting. So, you know, we do need to see things move back into the public service, but that is not going to go far enough to get people back into a protective system.
Yeah. So that's let's go to the fact that it's not actually helping people get jobs. And, I mean, if we focus on the age discrimination, and I think it's pretty clear that there is age discrimination, and a lot of older people who can't get work. Now, that's a perfect example of how the problem is not with the worker, the problem is with the employers. So you'd think that there would be more efforts made to target employers rather than the workers.
Well, that would require employers to take responsibility for the way that they discriminate against people, wouldn't it?
So, yeah, that's right.
It would make more sense. I think, you know, again, we have so many different factors contributing to this. So age discrimination is a huge one, but it's also whether the jobs are suitable. So, for example, a lot of older folks are going to have some level of, like, physical limitation that may not apply to younger people. They also have higher risk in terms of injury and so forth. So if we're talking about a job like being a barista or shelf stacking in a supermarket, and a whole range of different jobs that, you know, people quite wrongly, I think of as unskilled work, those jobs are A, skilled, but B, they're also physically demanding in a way that when we have people who've got disabilities, which is another massive cohort of folks who are on unemployment payments, and when we've got people who are older, they may be less physically able to do that work, but also that doing that work may put them at higher risk of short or long-term injury. So it is employer discrimination, but it's also much more than that. It's actually, do we have the right people for the right jobs? And where we don't, we shouldn't be forcing people into jobs.
Yeah, right. Okay, so in actual fact, this is a really big issue that everybody is actually, this society hinges on dealing with by being prescriptive and injurious to the unemployed.
Yeah, hard not to feel that these systems are designed to punish people, and anyone who has dealt with the social security system, particularly in the last, in the last couple of decades, but especially over the last decade, is that you feel like it's designed to make you feel desperate to get off it, whether or not you do have a job, and to find a way to exist without having to rely on income support, which is the opposite of what a safety net is supposed to be. It's an unsafety net, and it's hurting people, and it is in order to make budget savings off the backs of the poorest people in the community. And so, yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah, well, it ties in with the whole campaign about not prisons but homes, really.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a deep problem with the way that we're living in a really violent colony. There's been a couple hundred years here now of colonial violence inflicted upon the first peoples on this continent, and those practices of violence have continued and spread across a range of different people who are marginalised on the basis of who they are, whether that's because of their disability, because of their race, or because of, the fact that they are poor. And we've got these cycles of poverty continuing where the kinds of things that people are criminalised for are things that you possibly need to do to try and survive when you don't have enough money to live. And then the fact that you do things to try and survive when you don't have enough money are then criminalised, and then you find yourself in a system that's then going to lock you out of the workforce and make things harder and harder again. So we do have this kind of symbiosis of what's happening with people who are being criminalised just for trying to exist. A supportive welfare system, something that would give people enough money to live, something that would actually invest more deeply in helping people get to a point where when they are entering the workforce, they're more supported, they have more stability, and are better able to kind of engage in higher education or in the workforce, would go an awful long way to doing that process of, defunding prisons and actually having people feeling that they have better equipped to contribute.
The rollout of this new inverted commas system is curious as well, isn't it?
What was that, sorry?
It's curious, the way it's been rolled out.
So this has been my life for the past few weeks, and a little bit longer actually. But yeah, the way that the government has rolled this out has already caused an awful lot of harm. People are confused. People are afraid.
Yeah.
After the last couple of changes in the system, so particularly in 2015 and in 2018, which were the last two really big changes to employment services, the number of people being penalised skyrocketed, went up dramatically in a really short space of time. Now, obviously, we don't have people who, before a change, were jumping through all these hoops, doing everything the government said they had to, and then suddenly everyone just decided to go on strike and not do it anymore. Changes are hard. People are trying to learn the changes, and it's the people in the system, but it's also the people who work at the job agencies, and it's the people who work in the government department are trying to learn a system as well. So we have this system, we have this situation where you've got people trying to learn a thing, and while they're trying to learn it, there is this seeing weight hanging above them, ready to kind of knock them down. And the fact that we've had such a shambolic process already and the thing hasn't even started yet, communication has been late, communication has been inconsistent, people are confused, they haven't been able to get answers when they've been trying to. When they're contacting the government to say, what's going to happen to me? They're being told, we can't tell you, you call back later. So it's caused an awful lot of distress already. And we don't think it is a good omen for what's going to happen as of Monday.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, we'll have to have you back on to find out how your constituents and your research is panning out, because, change is hard.
It's very difficult. How intense it is. And if you make a wrong step, that's your poverty payment out the door.
Yeah. Thanks for talking to us this morning.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me.